more fun news for you. Tax season. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Judy Ann is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. You can talk live on air with me or off air, whatever you're more comfortable with. I love when people call and talk live on air. It's a little bit better back and forth sometimes. But if you're not comfortable with that, Judy Ann will write your question down and bring it into the studio. So again, that number is 610-758-8810. Email is also available through yourfinancialchoices.com. So we are talking about getting ready for tax season. What I'm going to start off by talking about is filing early. There was an article in Kiplinger that someone at the office shared with me. David, I'll give him credit for that. And it was a great article and something that we talk about probably from time to time. And it's always good to reiterate that filing early helps for a number of reasons. But one of the reasons that Kiplinger has mentioned this is to beat the bad guys to your tax refund in 2016. So it's just about awareness that if anyone reads the news, they know that there are people out there, you know, in apartments in Florida with computers, hacking your information, piecing it together. I can talk a little bit about some cybersecurity cautions to help if you would like as well. I'll do that at the end of the show if I have time. But talking about folks who piece together your personal information, who then therefore replicate you, imitate you, whatever you might want to call it, take your identity to simply file a tax return. Simply file a tax return and possibly file it showing a refund, and then they get their money and they go. And the trouble with that is a few weeks later, you might go to file your tax return and you're filing electronically and it gets rejected. And you say, why is my return getting rejected? Because someone already filed a return using your ID number. Where I have seen this happen in particular is when there has been like a deceased spouse. And it seems that, you know, these, perpetrators might scan obituaries, look for people who have died and somehow figure out how to get this information and file sometimes for deceased spouses. It might not be, you know, readily apparent or identifiable. And so you want to just be aware. But what happens is if they file first, then that could compromise your filing. So one of the recommendations was to file before they do to kind of circumvent their ability to file for a refund. That's not always doable. Some of us don't get our tax documents till later, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute, but we don't get our tax documents or tax reporting forms timely enough to file, you know, next week. We might have to wait till the end of January, the first week of February before we get everything. But I think it's always a good strategy to get ready to file early or file early if you can. And I'll talk about some of the reasons why we want to do that. So I thought that was a good point, something to share, to try to get your information together early. And that's one of the things I would like to cover in the show today is what are you going to watch for? What are you going to get ready? What do you have to be aware of? And we'll see if we can help get you organized to get this done a little sooner and a little bit more efficient, because there's a number of ways you can save money by being organized, efficient, and early. So let me go through some of those things. Again, if you have questions tonight, the phone number is 610-758-8810. So why do we want to, get ready early for tax season? Well, there's a number of reasons. One is we just mentioned for identity theft, you want to file before they do. But we also want to get ready early so that we can do some planning, so that we can allow time to process a tax return. Sometimes maybe your tax return won't go through for the first time. Maybe there's some conflicting information. Sometimes I see returns be rejected for electronic filing when there might be two parents of a child and one parent files and claims a dependent child, and then the second parent thinks they get to claim the child. That also can kick out a second filing of the return electronically. And usually what you end up having to do is either paper file the return and then prove that you get to claim the child, or you have to not claim them and recalculate the return and send it for electronic filing. So you might think, oh, I'm going to file my return and I'm counting on this refund that I'm going to get, and I'm going to need it in 2 days when I make a down payment on a house or a car or an apartment, or, you know, in 2 weeks, and it'll be plenty of time to get my refund to use it for whatever purpose I have. Well, if you don't have the proper information or there is a little glitch, then you can't rely on that refund. Sometimes people rely on their refunds and spend them before they get them, and you want to avoid being put in those situations. So you certainly want to make sure that if it's a refund that you might need or counting on, that you file as early as you can in case there are little hiccups or, you know, speed bumps along the way. It also allows you to see an estimate of what your tax burden might be. Maybe you owe, maybe you have a refund, but you might be able to save more money on taxes by funding an IRA or a Roth IRA for a retirement savers credit. There's different strategies that you might have available if only you had the money. So you want to prepare your return to the, you know, take it as far as you can, see what kind of tax planning strategies might be available. And if you need more money, then you might have a couple months to get it ready. So if you have your return done February 15th and your tax preparer or your advisor tells you, hey, if you could fund an IRA with $4,000 or $5,500, or if you're over 50, $6,500, if you could fund it and you had the money to fund this, you could save another $2,000 or whatever it might be, because there's certain credits that might be available to you if you can fund it, if you can bring down your income below a certain amount. All of these moving parts on your tax return, that if you only had that money, well, if I knew that on February 15th, I might be able to have the money by April 15th to fund that. Also, here's another idea. If you know this by February 15th and you can file your return, if you could fund an IRA, you might not have all the money, but you could use your refund to fund the IRA. You actually can file your return on February 15th, get your refund, and use that to fund the IRA by April 15th, because they allow us to fund IRAs by April 15th. So we have some time, even though we can file our return February 15th. All right. I had a call come in, and I'll answer that question as soon as I come back from my break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're listening to Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert on WDIY Allentown. At 7 p.m., stay tuned for In the Tradition, folk music with Tom Druckenmiller, your host. And he will undoubtedly have a variegated array for us of music. Is that right, Lori?
That's right. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and this is your host, Lori Siebert. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and we are talking about getting ready for tax season. We're going to give you some tips, etc., and I had a call come in. They didn't leave their name, but the question is a good question, and the question was, if you are, this person is 75 years old, retired, 75 years old, and has a required minimum distribution from a retirement account. he said, can we put that in an IRA? So there could be a couple different kinds of required minimum distributions. A required minimum distribution could be from a 401k, a 403b, those are retirement accounts with employers, or an IRA where you might have set it up yourself, or a rollover IRA where you've taken employer plan monies and put it into an account designated as a rollover IRA. It's the same kind of thing as an IRA. There's just different protections to it in some states. So this person, when you reach age 70 and a half, if you're no longer working, you're retired, and you have to take out a required minimum distribution based on your life expectancy, you can't take it out and put it back in. No, you can't take it out and put it back in. So if you didn't need the money, one of the things you might want to think about doing is if your tax bracket would give you wiggle room, maybe you're not in a high tax bracket, you could do Roth conversions or things like that. Oh, another thing you could do, this is a good strategy, and this is one I was going to mention anyway, so this is a good segue. If you have monies that you are supposed to take out of an IRA because you're over age 70 and a half and you don't need the money, and let's pretend you're also someone who's charitably inclined, you could do something called a qualified charitable distribution. A qualified charitable distribution directly to a charity. And then you don't have to report that income on page one. And you can do that up to $100,000. So I will give you an example. Let's pretend your required minimum distribution is $10,000. And you give $5,000 to the church every year. And you don't itemize because you own your home, you have low real estate taxes, you don't really have any deductions, you're not working, you don't have a lot of medical expenses, so you don't itemize, you take the standard deduction. But you go to church and you give them $5,000 every year. You could actually, instead of taking the distribution directly of $5,000, you could send a check directly, have the check made directly to the church or charity, nonprofit, whatever it is, for that amount. And I said in my example that your required minimum distribution was $10,000, the $5,000 was to charity. So what you would have is you'd have a distribution of $10,000, but only $5,000 would be reportable on page one. It's a great way to save income taxes if you don't need that money. You know, a lot of folks need it, so, you know, then they're taking it. But in your example, you asked if you could put it back into an IRA. Well, you can't, but that's an idea. Now, if you had a spouse who was under age 70 and working, they could maybe do it depending on some other circumstances. We have a caller on line one. We have Carolyn. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Lori. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
Good. How can I help?
I apologize. I'm off topic, and
that's okay.
I'm confused. Every time I think I know what I want to do, I read something, get more information, and then I'm not sure of myself. Our situation is we have a very simple estate. It's just my husband, myself, no children, no ex-spouses, pretty, you know, cut and dry, and I thought that a will was the way to go. But then I'm reading more and finding that maybe a revocable living trust might actually be good for us. I thought we didn't need one.
Mm-hmm.
But it explained how then you don't have to go through probate. You don't have to go to the courts. It saves lawyers' fees. Could you possibly speak to that
a little bit? Sure. I will often caution people about living trust, depending on where they've heard about it, because sometimes there are outfits that come in from out of town and hold seminars and say, hey, come to the seminar, learn about ways to save a lot of money and a lot of headaches and set up a living trust, and they'll sell the service for $2,500 and give you a book about 3 inches thick. So we want to be careful in those circumstances.
Okay, well, that wasn't it. Somebody left a financial book in the break room.
Okay, so the benefit of a living trust, we could talk about this for weeks, but the when we live in Pennsylvania and Lehigh County, Northampton County, you know, around Pennsylvania, probate is not an arduous process. It's not a difficult process. Probate is you go into the register of wills. Well, it's more than this, but basically you go into the register of wills, raise your hand, say, yes, I'm, you know, the executor under this will for this person, and I'll do a good job. And you get something called a short certificate, letters of testamentary, saying you're appointed the executor. And then you can go transact the business of changing accounts from the individual owner to the estate and paying the bills and the expenses and then distributing to the eventual beneficiaries. A little more complicated than that, but that's in a nutshell.
Okay.
So a living trust, for a living trust, you avoid probate if you've actually put those assets in the trust.
Right.
So things that go through a will are only those items that are in someone's name alone. So if you have IRAs with named beneficiary, that doesn't go through the estate. And you don't need a living trust for that. A beneficiary designation rules it, you know, controls it. Joint titling controls distribution. You don't have to go through the will or through probate for that. So having a living trust could, where I see it helping, might be where you're concerned about maybe financial management for someone, if someone's going to, you know, have health problems. But a power of attorney can take care of that as well. So if you go to an attorney, have proper estate planning documents done, you can manage some of those assets through beneficiary designation and asset titling. There's not maybe a lot left to put in a living trust. Someone might say, well, I could put my real estate in a living trust, my house, and then they don't have to probate for that. Yeah, you could do that, but you know, there's an extra expense to having the trust drafted. And when you pass on, you still might end up having an estate to probate anyway. Because if you missed putting something in the trust, then your executor would have to go probate. Because just because you have the trust doesn't mean it rules. You have to actually fund the trust, put the assets in the trust.
Okay.
And as I said, you wouldn't do that to, you know, joint account necessarily.
Right.
You could. You wouldn't necessarily do that to retirement accounts because you would have maybe a named beneficiary. Now, sometimes people will have a trust under their will, a testamentary trust. It's under the last will and testament, where you're not sure what's going to happen during your lifetime. And if you die and maybe there's minor children that might be beneficiaries, you might have a trust under the will for them in case they're minors, like if you had nieces or nephews or things like that. So a living trust could accomplish that too. So there's pros and cons to it.
I see.
Oh, the other reason someone might want a living trust while they're alive, Carolyn, is if they have real estate in other states.
Okay.
That way they avoid probate in another
state.
So it's convenient for that.
Mm-hmm. But that would not be our case, though.
Right, right. So, you know, I'm not sure. Each person has their own circumstances, and you'd probably have to discuss it with your attorney or your advisors.
Okay,
I hope that helps a little bit.
Yes, it's, you know, I think I know what's going on, and then I end up getting confused again. But
no, but it's good. It's good. What I like to say is, you know, be informed, gather the information, be a skeptic, and then validate. So
okay.
You're doing the right thing.
I love it. Thank you
okay,
so
Carolyn,
much.
Okay, thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Folks, we'll be back in a sec. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
You're back to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We were talking about getting ready for tax season, and I want to follow up to something the our no-name caller had asked about, the required minimum distribution. And I was saying, if you don't need the money, another idea might be the qualified charitable distribution. A lot of people who work with financial advisors, brokers, custodians who are over age 70 and a half may have set up what we call recurring distributions, where it's set up to be done automatically. It could be monthly, it could be annually, where you automatically get your required minimum distribution. It's set it and forget it. The issue is, if you are someone who would benefit from the qualified charitable distribution option, then you want to call your broker or your custodian or your advisor right away to say, when am I supposed to get that distribution? Maybe I want to think about whether this is a good idea for me or not to do the qualified charitable distribution. It makes a lot of sense for a lot of people. So you might be someone who just has your IRA distribution, your Social Security, maybe a pension, and you don't itemize deductions. And, you know, maybe you're paying income tax of $1,000. Well, if we took $5,000 off page one of your return, that might save you, you know, I don't know, $1,000 or something. So it would be worth looking at if it's something you're doing anyway. If you're making charitable contributions anyway, it's a great option to explore. For folks who itemize, sometimes it's a wash because when you use the qualified charitable distribution, you don't then take a deduction on Schedule A. If you have a standard deduction, it's easy. But if you are someone who itemizes anyway, sometimes it could be a bit of a wash. But if for other people who have certain limitations, then taking that extra income off page one, it can certainly make a difference. So you want to work with your advisor to go through the numbers if you are thinking it could benefit you. So if someone's set up for automatic required minimum distribution payments, you might want to stop and think, should that money instead get sent to the charity? And then you're not going to do your monthly check or your weekly check in the basket then. You just send in the empty envelope saying, already done, already done, already done. Being raised Catholic, you have the envelope every week, you know, and there's a lot of guilt around not putting that envelope in the basket. So you can put an empty envelope in the basket and say you did it. Anyway, so that's an idea and should be reviewed. As far as getting ready for tax season, now let me run through a few things. You want to get your tax forms organized and ready. And the trick to know what tax forms to take in to your preparer or to put in a bucket for yourself if you're preparing your return yourself is have an envelope, a folder, something like that, that as the mail comes in, the telling sign on the outside of every envelope that's important tax information is it will say important tax information enclosed. It's required by the IRS that if a tax document is sent to you, outside the envelope, it's going to say important tax information enclosed. You have to be smart, though, folks. Don't be taken in by, you know, great marketing people who put on the outside of an envelope tax information or something like that to get you to open junk mail. Be careful. But you'll know what you're going to be looking for because you'll know if you're with, you know, ABC investment account or, you know, that you worked for ABC cleaning company for your W-2 or your pension is with ABC pension company. So you're knowing what to watch for in the mail. Have an envelope, a folder ready, everything that says important tax information, put it in there. That's how you're starting to get ready for that piece of it. And that information, technically, most documents are required to be reported by January 31st. Every year, the custodians get extensions because of mutual funds and dividends that pay that get reclassified, rather than continually getting corrected 1099s, the IRS has allowed them to have extensions to make sure their numbers are good before they issue the 1099. So some of those come a little later. Sometimes you might not get it till mid-February, sometimes till the end of February, but you want to watch for those. Usually your W-2 should be in by the first week of February, and your pension payments, 1099-Rs, IRA payments, 1099-Rs, your Social Security statement, those should be coming in by, you know, if not already or by the end of January, at least the first week of February. Use your prior year return to track what you're waiting for, what's left, what's missing, that type of thing. Use your last year's tax return as a guide. Those are the documents that we have to wait for, and those are the documents that we especially want to make sure that we report, because the IRS has a matching system, and if you go in and just guess at the numbers and they're not correct, the IRS will send you a notice saying that they've adjusted your return because the numbers didn't correspond, so they want the numbers as they have been reported to the IRS. I would expect at some point in the system, I think they do this in Spain, if the government already has all of certain numbers reported, there's kind of a disconnect of why do we then have to report them again? The system in Spain is you report anything that's different than what you would expect. So if the W-2's already been reported to the IRS, 1099 interest has already been reported to the IRS, but maybe your medical expenses haven't, then I think in Spain they only go in and report the medical expenses is one way they do it. That would be nice and much simpler system here, but I don't think we're there yet. All right, so you watch for your tax forms, gather them all up, and then what you can do in the meantime is start getting ready the non-tax form information, such as the Schedule A itemized deductions, if you itemize, or if you're a business person, your business income and expenses, your home office deductions, your estimated tax payments, notes about any changes in your situation, if your marital status changed, if you have children now that you didn't have in the prior year, make sure you have their Social Security numbers, their dates of birth, the correct spelling of their name, that it matches the Social Security card. If you had a change in jobs, make sure you have W-2 from the old job, W-2 from the new job, change in maybe your job description that you'd put on the return. So you can start collecting all of this information while you're waiting for your tax document, so that once that last tax document comes in, you are ready to go with your tax return. Okay, so we are going to talk about some of those items, the Schedule A items, when we come back from our next break. And we also had another call come in off air, and I will answer that question when I come back from the break as well. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and I will be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. The time is 6:30. Currently 25 degrees in the Lehigh Valley, going down to a low of 15. Tomorrow, Thursday, partly sunny with a high near 34. Thursday night, a low of 28. For Friday, a 20% chance of rain after 1 p.m., partly sunny with a high near 45. Friday night, a 70% chance of rain, low around 35. For Saturday, a 60% chance of rain, mainly before 1 p.m., cloudy with a high near 44. Saturday night, a low around 28. That's the weather forecast. Lori, I hope that you were able to slosh your way through this deep snow that we just had today. I call it a pathetic dusting.
Hey, well, last night I was working, and I looked out the window, and it looked like a blizzard. And I thought, oh, gosh, I hadn't even noticed, hadn't even looked out, didn't know what the weather was supposed to be like. And I thought, maybe I should leave. So I got on the road about 7 o'clock, and the highways looked like they were somewhat salted, but the side roads were not. And there were police all over the place. There were cars in ditches. So it was amazing. I think that first snowfall, people just don't know how to drive. They don't remember how to drive.
And go to the grocery store and try to buy bread and milk.
Right. You know,
people think they're never going to get back there.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it cleared up today. So we had a great question come in, and Jane called and asked. She said she heard from a coworker that a new form we need to wait for taxes exists now because our employers pay for our health care. Is that true? Jane, that's interesting, because that is one of the new items I wanted to talk about. What's new? There is a form that's going to be provided by employers or the marketplace called a 1095. And the form from an employer is a form 1095C. It's employer provided health insurance and what they offer and what the coverage is. And if you get health insurance on the marketplace, it's called a 1095A, the Health Insurance Marketplace Statement Reporting Enrollments and Qualified Health Plans through the marketplace. Those are used on the return to make sure that folks have adequate coverage. So I do believe you're going to need that form, whether or not, if you have employer-provided insurance, if it's going to keep you from filing, I haven't explored that yet. I don't know if it's just a matter of checking the boxes saying, yes, you have the coverage. Where it becomes a problem, Jane, is for people who qualify for the premium tax credit, where you're getting like a subsidy towards your health insurance, or if you qualified for one through the marketplace. I think it's more of an issue there, because if your income is too high, you have to pay back the credit if you took it. Some people can choose to have the credit ahead of time and apply it to their insurance directly. Other people can get the credit when they file their tax return. But if you took it ahead of time and your income is too high, you have to pay it back. So I think it's more of an issue for the folks with the marketplace health insurance. And I will be curious to see, Jane, when I get into the software, which I have not been in the 2016 or the 2015 tax software yet, to know if the employer-provided 1095C is imperative in letting you complete your filing. All right. So in the meantime, just gather up everything else. And if that's the last thing you need, I'm hoping that those would be filed similar to W-2s and would be completed by January 31st. But it is a new filing requirement. So some employers might not, you know, be in a position to get that done. So good question. You do need to be on the lookout for the 1095C from an employer. We had another caller call in. I love all the calls, by the way. The phone number is 610-758-8810. I love questions. Albert called in, and he said, if you open a Roth IRA a year ago, and now you find yourself deciding to take the money back out, what are the ramifications of doing that with taxes and other financial considerations? All right. Albert, a few things happen with a Roth IRA. What happens with a Roth IRA, when you make a contribution into it, it's with after-tax monies. So if I put $5,000 into a Roth IRA for 2015, and here we are in January 2016, and I think, oh, shoot, I needed that money. I shouldn't have done that. You can take out the original $5,000 without a problem. There's two ways to do it. So if I did it right away and I just want to reverse it, because sometimes, Albert, what people find, they go to do their 2015 tax return and they find out they weren't allowed to do a Roth contribution. Maybe they made too much money. That's a reclassification, and that you just take back out. And if you do it by April 15th for the 2015 tax return, so if you put $5,000 Roth you know, $5,000 in Roth in 2015, you realize you didn't want to do it or you couldn't have done it, and you just take it back out. You do it by April 15th. It's like it didn't happen. Let's say we're 3 years down the line and you think, gosh, I shouldn't have done that. You can take out your original contributions without any penalty. But the earnings would be income taxable and subject to a 10% penalty for early distribution if you didn't keep it in there the longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half. So the earnings have to stay in the Roth IRA to avoid penalties and tax the longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half. But the original contributions can come out. That's on a regular Roth IRA. There's different rules if you did a conversion. So I assume this is just a regular Roth IRA. If it's just a mistake, you reclassify it, it's like it didn't happen. You want to be careful if you had done it to try to qualify for some, you know, retirement savers credit or something like that. If you've qualified for that in a prior year and it's too late to, you know, it's all about the timing. So Albert, I'll just leave it at that. It gets too complicated otherwise. So you could reclassify it, be done as if it didn't happen. Or if it's more than a year, then there's an issue with the earnings. Just take out the original contribution. Okay, I hope that helped. Folks, if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. So in getting ready, we want to have a folder set up for all the tax forms that are going to come in. The outside of the envelope says important tax information enclosed. As far as waiting for those to come in, you want to start getting ready all the other information. One of the reasons you want to start getting ready the other information is the more organized you are, the less time it's going to take, especially if to prepare your return, especially if you're paying someone to help you. So if you are paying someone to help you, this is another way to save money. It's not just strategies about saving on your income tax. It's about saving on your tax preparation. The more organized you are, the better. Sometimes people might think, well, if I'm so organized, I could just do it myself. Yes, you could. And you might have an easy return and be able to do that. And that could even have more tax, you know, or cost savings for you. But sometimes it's nice to have a professional help if they have tax saving strategies that you might not be aware of. Sometimes we do not know what we do not know. And it's nice to work with professionals sometimes who would. So when we are talking about what else to get ready for your return, if you're someone who itemizes your deductions every year, that means you're not taking a standard deduction that everyone can get. You're taking an itemized deductions for Schedule A, which is your medical, charitable contributions, real estate taxes, maybe state and local taxes or sales tax, whichever is higher. Maybe you have a lot of miscellaneous itemized deductions like investment expenses, maybe estate deductions. You might have been a beneficiary of an estate. So there are a number of deductions you could take when you itemize. You can start getting those ready. Prepare it, organize it. Don't walk into your preparer with a bunch of bags with your prescription label stapled to it that carried your prescription bottle. You know, I have seen it where people walk in with, you know, 100 CVS bags. Just don't do it. If you go to the drugstore, the pharmacy, they usually will give you a printout of what you paid. So get that organized. It takes time. Sometimes your doctor will need a couple days to get the receipt set up. Start getting that ready. So medical, real estate taxes, sales tax. If you're someone who doesn't have state and local taxes, maybe you're retired, you don't work, but you bought a big car, the sales tax is a deduction if you itemize. There's a general sales tax based on your income. And then you can add to that big ticket items like cars, motorhomes. I'm trying to think what else. Cars, motorhomes, boats, things like that. You want to get that information ready. Charitable contributions. I can talk more about charitable contributions in a minute. Investment expenses typically are off your statements. And then charitable contributions I'll talk about in a minute. I had another question come in. Albert asked another question. If the withdrawal from the Roth IRA results in a loss, markets down and money reduced, but they want to take the money out, what happens then? That's also a good question. Well, Albert, when we put $5,000 into the account, we didn't get a deduction for that. It's just like a change in the investment. A loss on a Roth IRA, not a deduction. You know, I don't know if I've had a loss on an IRA. If anything, it would not be any kind of capital loss. I'm just debating here as to whether I think it's just, it might be a miscellaneous itemized deduction. I'm going to have to check on that. I don't know it right off the top of my head. So the market's down, money reduced. Similar to a 529, if someone puts money into a college savings account, let's say I put $10,000 into a 529 account, which is a tax-free account. I don't get a deduction for that on my federal return. I put $10,000 into a 529. If I take the money out because it's tanking, it's now worth $8,000, if it drops to $8,000, I can take that $2,000 as a loss on Schedule A, miscellaneous itemized deduction. So I have to be able to itemize. And I'm thinking that might be the case with the Roth IRA. And I apologize. I just don't know it off the top of my head because I don't think I've had it. So I'll have to see. But if anything, it would probably be a miscellaneous itemized deduction because it wasn't a capital investment. It's not a Schedule D loss. All right. So good question. I'll have to see if I can find something on that and maybe cover that on another show. Or if I can look it up at the break. I'm not sure I can. For charitable contributions, folks, you need receipts. You need verification that you've made charitable contributions. You cannot say, I gave $5,000 to the church without some kind of documentation that indeed you did give $5,000 to the church or $250. You need receipts. You need receipts for the Goodwill or the Salvation Army or the Purple Heart. You want those little papers they leave. You have to write down the description of the property that you donated and the estimated value, and it's thrift shop value. Just because you paid $500 for a suit doesn't mean that's going to be your deduction for the $500 suit. You bought the $500 suit. You wore it for 10 years. It's not even half the value. It's how much would someone in a thrift shop pay for that suit, and that might be $20. So you want to be reasonable with your deductions and what you're taking. For those kinds of deductions, if it exceeds $500, we have to do a special form called an 8283. And if you want to take a deduction for more than $500 on those in-kind kind of donations, we're going to need the name of the charity, the address, and the value of the donation. So there's more information that's required, and we have to detail that. If you make a donation of more than $250, you should have a written acknowledgement from the charity saying they did not give you something in kind for it. So if you made a donation to a public radio station or a public television station and they sent you a $100 DVD of the Bee Gees and you made a $250 donation, well, they're going to say that you've received something of value and you don't get the full deduction of $250 if you got something in return. It's knocked down. You have to adjust your contribution. So for anything $250 or over, you're going to have a receipt for that. If you make $50 contributions to 100 different charities, they may not give you a receipt. Even they typically do because it's a way they can ask for more money. But you would have a check as your backup, or you'll have a credit card statement as backup. So you want to make sure you have all of those together. I like people to list those out, total them up. That makes it more efficient, and confirm that you have those receipts. Some preparers want to look at the receipts, so I just don't want to look at a stack of Goodwill, you know, tickets, though. Be organized and total it up. Makes a big difference. Folks, if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
And welcome back to the show. Albert, if you're still listening, I did look it up, and it's similar to what I described for the 529. So it would be a miscellaneous itemized deduction loss. And the miscellaneous itemized deductions are subject to 2% limitation. So if you have $100,000 on page one of your return, 2% of that is $2,000. If your loss is $5,000, let's say you lost the whole $5,000 you put in a Roth, then it would be $5,000 less the $2,000. It would be $3,000 available deduction if you itemize, and then it's the amount of the itemized deductions. And the logic is you're not reporting gains on Roth IRAs either, so that's the flip side of it. So just because it's lost in the market lately, if that is, you know, the reason you were concerned about taking it out, because you're thinking, oh my gosh, I put $5,000 in the Roth and now it's tanked and it's not worth it. Well, the markets, you know, may recover as well. So you want to think about that. Where this situation becomes more problematic is if someone did a conversion of an IRA to a Roth IRA, and that you can also recharacterize. So let's pretend you had a $200,000 IRA and you converted that to a Roth. When you convert an IRA to a Roth, you report the whole IRA on your tax return that you've converted. So I've converted $200,000. I put $200,000 on page one of my return, and I'm going to report that as income and pay tax on it. And when would I do that? I would do that if I think I'm going to be in a lower tax bracket today than I am in the future. So let's pretend I do it, and the market tanks, and my $200,000 conversion goes down to, you know, $150,000. I might think that wasn't such a good move. The IRS lets us change that, reconvert it back to an IRA, and then I don't have to report the $200,000 on my return. So I reconvert back to the IRA, and the value might go back up. So I'd, you know, in the IRA. I don't want to take out $200,000, put it into a Roth IRA, pay tax on $200,000, have the Roth IRA go back down to $150,000. I might then wait the period of time that I need to wait and then reconvert it when it's at a lower amount. So then I could reconvert it at $150,000 instead of $200,000, even though it might be the same positions. All right, I hope that helps. So good question. Thank you for calling that in. When we are also thinking about getting ready for tax season, one thing I really, really like to reiterate for folks is just because you didn't itemize in the past does not mean you can't itemize now or in the future. So you really need to reevaluate your situation. Maybe now you are giving more to charity. Maybe you bought long-term care insurance. Maybe you had some high medical expenses. Sometimes people bunch their medical expenses all in one year. Maybe you got a hearing aid and had dental work and bought glasses and bought long-term care. Your medical expenses might go up such that in the past, if you didn't itemize, now you can. Sometimes a change in marital status. If you were married, the standard deduction was quite high. Now you're single, your standard deduction goes down, but you still have the same medical cost. You might still have the same real estate taxes. You might have the mortgage interest. You might have the same charitable contributions that you did as a married couple. Now you're single. You might be able to itemize now. So watch out for that. Home office deductions, I want to mention for business folks. Business, if you have a home office, if you're self-employed and you have a home office, which has to be exclusive use for your business, and you keep track of the square footage, you keep track of the utilities, the real estate taxes, the repairs, all of these costs related to your home, and you get a deduction based on the percentage that your home office is to your whole home, that's a lot of work sometimes. And maybe it's not worth that much. What the IRS has allowed, I think it's been a couple years now, is something called the simplified method, where you get a deduction for a home office of $5 times the square footage, not to exceed 300 square feet, which would mean it's a $1,500 deduction that you can take without having to keep track of all those little receipts and everything for your repairs and utilities. What happens, you then don't get to take a separate depreciation deduction, but you still get to take the mortgage interest, the real estate taxes. So it's kind of a nice extra easy way to do your home office. You still have to have exclusive use, but it's a little bit easier for record keeping. And then there's some little bit of complications if you switch methods. You can switch methods every year, but if you have some kind of a carry forward that you didn't use the whole home office deduction, it was a loss, then it can impact your carry forward. It's too complicated for this discussion, but just something to be aware of. 529 contributions, if you made contributions to education accounts and you're a Pennsylvania resident, we get a deduction on our PA tax returns for that. It doesn't mean that you own the account. It could be your child who owns the account. You're doing it for your grandchildren. It could be your niece or nephew. You just need their Social Security number and their name, and that you had made the contribution directly to that 529 account. Keep track of that. Get this information all together for your tax preparer or for your own tax preparation. The other thing you're going to want to make sure you have ready are your estimated tax payments. If you are someone who pays quarterly estimated tax payments, we're going to want to know, did you do them for federal? Did you do them for Pennsylvania? Maybe you even did it for local if you're self-employed. And when did you make those payments? Were you timely? Did you make your fourth quarter payment in December, or did you make your fourth quarter in January? It makes a difference for people who itemize their deductions. You want to go through your checkbook and look for that. And while you're in there looking at your checkbook, you could also look to see if you had some charitable contributions that you might have missed getting a receipt for. Again, if it's under $250, your check, your canceled check, will be your backup for that. Go through your checkbook, look for anything out of the ordinary that would apply to your income tax. If you have marital status changes, make sure you tell your preparer. I sat through putting in a return one day with a woman. She'd always been with her boyfriend, and kind of, any changes? No changes. She just gave me her stuff. I'm doing all of her stuff. Her boyfriend's sitting there doing her stuff. And at the end, it comes up that, oh yeah, they got married. I couldn't believe it was something that did not come up in the conversation. We ask these questions. Did your marital status change? So, might not be obvious to other people. It makes a difference, because you might think, well, she wanted to file separately anyway with only her information. But in the IRS's eyes, that's a different marital status change. It's not, oh, just I want to file on my own, I'm going to file single. It's called married filing separate, and it's one of the worst filing statuses. So lots of limitations and criteria that apply to that. If you have children, you want to make sure, if you had child care, if you're paying for child care and both spouses work, or one spouse works while the other is a full-time student or is disabled, you may qualify for the child care credit. If you are someone who has flexible spending accounts at work, you may want to set aside money out of your flexible spending account for that child care. It might be for that child tax savings for you than you.